Morning. I told them to put us in the public lecture theater for a couple reasons. One was mostly that really this is a two-computer talk and there's only one screen, but mostly because it's bigger, but oh well. Here we are.
Yep. Well, we've actually now been introduced, so I don't think we need to do that again.
Awesome.
I'm David. This is Andrew. We both, between us, must now represent... Whoops, I'm feeding back. Well, I don't know, 20-odd years at least of programming.
Apparently we're both standing in the middle.
Yeah, okay, that's going to be a pain.
So,
GTK, GNOME, C, Java, Python, that's the name of our talk. Everyone here, we assume, is here because they want to learn how to write a GTK/GNOME application. And we are thus assuming they're vaguely familiar in one of C, Python, or Java. If you're not, you might find it a little bit interesting, but you'll probably pick it up. You'll find that most of the concepts transfer to any GTK binding language that you care to name. So yeah, even if you're not familiar with these three languages, you should find a lot of what we're going to cover
hopefully interesting.
Yeah.
So I will say again, and we'll give an opportunity for shuffling around, this room is very wide angle. So for those of you that are just sort of here to hang out and do work and listen and have a laugh, sides are fine. Those of you that actually want to see code being written, you're going to really want to be in the center block, and there are a good 10 or so seats in the middle. So feel free to take the chance now to move. Throw up a terminal. If you can't read what David has on screen right now, chances are you're not going to enjoy this as much. You've been warned. The other thing I should probably address is that this is the second time we've been invited to give this talk. David and I gave this talk at LCH 2007 in Sydney, and people really enjoyed it, which is how we got away with giving exactly the same talk again this year. It's not exactly the same talk. We've got two things going. See, tutorials back in Perth in 2004 were 4 hours long. It was awesome. It was this sort of full-day thing, and you know, we got really in-depth things. And so when David and I came up with the concept for this talk, we're like, remember those tutorials we used to do in Perth and Adelaide that were like 4 hours long and they really got into stuff? Like, yeah. Well, that's what we want to do. Okay, cool. We'll make sure you get a 4-hour slot. So last year we had an hour and a half. It was a bit rushed. So this year we said, okay, we want to do the same talk again. People seem to like it, but we really want this, you know, the time slot, 4 hours, so we can really get into it. And so they said, tutorials this year are going to be 4 hours. It's going to be awesome. And now this year we have an hour and 50 minutes.
Well, there's nothing about that.
Yeah.
So we've been to that. So an overview of GTK. GTK is a open source graphics toolkit. Everyone knows that, either that or perhaps you're in the wrong place. GTK is an LGPL toolkit written in the C language, thus bindable into everything. And thus, because of that, it sometimes ends up a little bit funny when you're in C. Some of you go, why is this so verbose? That's the reason. We're going to cover the fundamentals of GTK, which are applicable to any language. It's building a UI, how box packing works, how the event main loop works, how signals work. We're going to cover some getting started with some C examples. We're going to go across to some more bits and pieces. We'll switch to Java. And fundamentally, we'll do some other bits and pieces and switch to Python. We're not going to do every example in every language. It would take too long. So what you're going to find, you're going to see the example in one language and go, okay, the concepts are convertible. I can see how to write that in something else. If you can't see how to write that in something else, after the talk, come and talk to us. We'd be more than happy to show you how that works in the language of your choice, assuming we can program in it.
One of the things about GTK is it's interesting to figure out where it came from. GTK, if you didn't know, stands for the G toolkit. It really is the GIMP toolkit. Now, everybody in open source world, certainly anybody at this conference, has heard of and probably used the GIMP. The thing about the GIMP was is that when the guy sat down to first write it, all that was out there was Motif, which anybody with a bit of old Unix or sysadmin background will remember was one of the ugliest things ever invented. And it's still the ugliest thing ever invented, pretty much, except maybe xlibraw. That sounds like a shirt company or something.
Yeah.
These guys came up with their own graphics toolkit, and this is the basic tutorial, so we'll be going over some basic concepts. Hopefully the value for you is that somewhere in here, one of these little basic things that normally everyone else takes for granted will be new to you, and that's the whole point of this tutorial, is to cover some of the basic foundation elements and hopefully convey something you didn't know already. In the case of GIMP, a toolkit, we should probably even start with that. Toolkit are the pieces that you use to do drawing. And specifically, the pieces used to build up user interfaces. And so that's what they went and created for themselves. And a bunch of people like the look and feel of that. Myself, lots of people have heard me tell this story, but around about 97, 98, one of the major applications was GIMP, and there were a few other things kicking around. And GIMP and GGK had these square gray buttons. They were rectangular gray buttons, really ugly. And then KDE and friends had these sort of oval-shaped yellow buttons, right? And they were also really ugly, but I didn't like the yellow and the round edges. And I did like the square edges in gray, so that's why I'm a GNOME hacker.
Very quickly, in case you want to do what we're doing at home, play along, that's the versions we're using. We'll skip that very quickly.
Go back one. Those of you that, I do feel bad, I meant to get a slide of saying, you can install all the following stuff if you want to tag along while you're here at the conference. Probably what I should back up to is that there are, in most distributions, they split up packages between GTK, the library you need to actually have stuff drawing on the screen, and GTK devel, or dash dev, something to that effect, which is all the header files and stuff you need to link against and the things that allow you to build programs with it. I don't use Ubuntu, I use Gentoo, which makes the following optimization. Disk space is cheap, so just include the bloody header files. So if you're on Gentoo and you've got GTK installed, you're all set. If you're on anybody else's binary distribution, you probably would want to make sure you pull in these devel packages, and we'll be touching on that again a bit later. But along the way, that's if you're sort of wondering why aren't these examples working for me as you're working, it could very well just do that.
Okay. So let's actually get into some content. Fundamentally, everything you can see in GTK that's on the screen, that's a window or a button or a radio or a combo box or any kind of UI element you can see, is a widget. We give this the nice namespace name of GTK widgets. And this literally does mean every graphic element. But all items inherit in an object-oriented way from GTK widget. A label is a class, is a subclass of widget. A button is a subclass of widget. It's also a subclass of a container and a bin. We'll get into that. So you've got an object inheritance. Any operation you can carry out on a widget, you can carry out on a button because a button is a widget. Any operation you carry out on a bin, you can carry out on a button because a button is a bin. And so this is the way that your calling works when you're like setting properties and making function calls and connecting signals on GTK widgets, is you can look up the inheritance, find out what's going on. But when you're actually building your UI, the top level of UI is a window. So fundamentally, you've got two trees to think about, and this is not always very clearly explained. One's an inheritance tree of what things really are, and the other's an actual packing tree of how things are structured. So you can see, as I said, labels are type of widget, containers are type of widget, tables are type of container. We'll get into that in a second, what a container is and what a bin is. But fundamentally, everything's built up from widgets. Windows are type of widget, and when you pack your UI into a window. If that makes any sense.
It's analogous to the situation that almost everybody has to. Can you guys do that outside the room, please? Michelle? The situation is analogous to when you first explain to a new user that the desktop, which is in front of them, that has the My Computer icon, or whatever it's called in these days, contains that, which contains the file system, which contains your C drive or your root file system, which then contains home, Andrew, and that's where your home directory is, except that your home directory contains the desktop directory, right? And sometimes people have a little bit of a rough bump getting over that, and of course once you understand how the file system works, then of course it's a no-brainer. And the situation with window and widget is the same. Most people think of window as being the outside element, but in terms of object-oriented inheritance, it's a child of the containers. Yeah. One more thing about this one is that there are two classes of window, and very simply, containers and all their subclasses are widgets that contain other widgets. And then there are other widgets that just are off on the side. It doesn't particularly matter what a widget inherits from. It carries on.
Okay. So the first thing you're going to be doing when you're running a GTK program, and this is what makes everyone a terrible software engineer, is build your UI. Who cares about the algorithms and the data structures and how it's actually going to work? First thing anyone ever does is build their UI and then figure everything else out later. So you've got a couple of options when building your UI. The most obvious of that is to do your UI programmatically. You can write code. you write code, and we'll show you an example of this in about 3 seconds, that describes how your UI goes together. All right, so in fact, look at that. We'll write some code. And I'll actually move into the right directory.
So how's the font? Can people read that?
Is that good for people?
Awesome.
Okay, I'm just creating
last year when we did this, someone came up to us afterwards and expressed shock and horror that we weren't using autotype. David and I looked at this person like, autotype, what's that? It's like, oh yeah, it's this program that records keystrokes and then you just pretend to be typing in front of the audience.
This is actually real.
So this is backspace keys, spelling mistakes, miscompilations, everything.
All right, so let's just put in some...
So the first thing David did was pull in the GTK APIs. So we're going to start in C. Part of the thing here is if you don't speak C, that's okay. One, you can be amazed and awed and thankful that you don't have to do this. But two, the theme that will come up a few times is that GTK is the same regardless of which language you're in. So if you're a C programmer, then this is all good for you. But if you're a programmer in some other language, then the conceptual stuff that we're showing is what's relevant. And we're just going to start at C.
All right, so the first thing we need to do here is initialize GTK. You can see here you pass your argv and your argc in. GTK will poke around in your argument vector to remove any X11 specific properties from your argument vector and feed them to X11. This includes things like dash dash display or dash dash geometry, all of those traditional X
Let's do it functions. Pop out your terminal and run, you know, the dash dash function.
That's a good example. I need help. Dash GTK.
So if anybody's ever done help to your own program, and this has been improving recently, but you see this long list of options, and you're like, where did all this come from? And you might have started to notice after a while that the list of options across most programs is the same. And these are parsed by the GTK init call. They actually take them out of your argv vector. The ones that it deals with, so you're just left with the ones that are specific to your program. But that's one of the ways that session management works and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Okay. So we create ourselves a variable called a window. Traditionally, when you're writing C, you make everything of type GTK widget. It just works out more convenient. The problem is because C has strong typing and no concept of type inheritance, you're finally going to be doing a lot of casting. GTK provides cast macros that are different from the standard C macro in that they'll do your type checking for you at runtime. So if you pass the wrong type and it doesn't cast, you'll get a runtime warning. Unfortunately, there's no better way to do it in C, but we can do it. So we'll say window equals GTK window new, GTK window top level. So we're creating a new object of type GTK window. And specifically, the parameter that needs for its constructor is what type window is. It's a top level. Practically every window you ever create ever will be a top level, unless you're making a tooltip, I think, or some very rare exceptions.
I should probably point out that the code for this will be available on our websites later in the day or two, but most conveniently, the code from last year's is already on our websites. So if you're typing like mad trying to keep up with this, you could probably give yourself a break and just watch.
Okay, so Curtis has a button as well. So we're going to hit button equals GTK, button new. And now, because it's much too early, I've actually forgotten what the correct... So here we go, look at this. I've been writing this code for like half a decade now, and I still can't remember yet. But that's fine, help is on the way. This is dev help. So I know that what I want to do is GTK button new.
This one's an important one because I actually have no understanding of how the GNOME hackers wrote any of this stuff before this stuff exists.
Okay.
This is all recent history stuff, and you're like, the fact that there's any GNOME programs at all is kind of a miracle.
So here you can see here I want GTK button new with label because I want to pass it a label. So GTK button new with label. Hello, peeps. Okay, we now, back to that container thing. The window is a container that can have one item, what we refer to in GTK language as a bin. So we now go GTK container add. It's a function on GTK container. There we go. We then cast. Oops. So we cast our window to the type GTK container. That's that runtime type checking I spoke about. You could just do GTK container star wrapped in brackets, which would work and would compile, But then if your type isn't actually correct, you'll just segfault your program. This way, if your type's not correct, you'll get a warning saying you've tried to cast the wrong variable to the wrong type, and then possibly segfault your program. But at least you know why. So now we can add our button. Oops, I just can't type today. So if we look at GTK container add, you can see here, I need to make this a little bit bigger, don't I? GTK container add takes a GTK container, which we've got, and it takes a GTK widget, which is the child, which you can see we've got with the GTK widget button.
If I can just jump in here for a moment.
Yep.
So the people who wrote this quickly created a completely object-oriented system in C. Anybody who's got a computer science background or an old Unix background will realize that this is insanity incarnate. But they did it. Part of the reason that this looks a little bit strange and or ugly and or hideous, depending on your personal aesthetic taste, is that they have gone and created a type-safe, object-oriented system with full inheritance that works. That's all right. You can even stand up straight. Don't hurt your back. What is interesting about the signature of the function that David described is that this is actually a method. This is a method on objects of type GTK container. And as is you see in languages like Perl and Python, the convention that methods are functions where the first argument is the thing that you're acting on. So in language where it would be window.add, which we'll be seeing in other languages later on, window.add button is in C written as make the call to the function called GTK container add to the window you're adding to, and then whatever the arguments are. So that's a convention you see across the board. First argument in a function like this is of the type of the function, it's probably a method.
Okay, so we now need to actually show every widget by default comes up in the hidden state. So we call show all on our top level, which will recursively go through our packing and show every widget. And finally, and most importantly, we need to start the main loop, which we will discuss in depth in a second. And we'll save that. Go across to here, and we'll go gc-o demo. So the quickest way to compile this is to get the link flags and the C flags from package config. We have a slide for this, which has this line on it. I'll check if I actually got it correct first. Okay, I'll do that while that's actually swapping my compiler back in. So it's a standard boring GCC line. You've got an output, you've got input, and you need a whole stack of dash dash, or dash I, blah, dash L, blah, dash big L, blah, which is a pain in the neck to work out because who knows how your system's configured. So package config provides a way to discover that. If we go across to here and actually just run this thing. You can see I just put it inside a shell expansion.
Do C flags first.
So if we just take this here, you can see there's the list of compiler flags for the includes. And if we take the other bits, there's a list of linker flags for the libraries.
So clearly that's the sort of thing you want to remember.
So you can see here I just banged it into this shell expansion, the back ticks. People are familiar with that, I assume. That's general consensus for yes. So it's expanding that within that command line to that. Later on, you'll discover, you can see here this thing, this GTK 2.0 at the end is the name of the package we want. Later on, we'll be providing multiple packages. You can just give a whole list. And package config is very clever. It will compact those lists together. It will only put everything in the link path once. It'll put everything into the correct order. It's wonderful. It's high tech. And it saves so much time.
For example, here, GTK depends on something called GDK, which is the drawing library. That's a wrapper around xlib and a bunch of other stuff. It also depends on glib, which is a bunch of foundation libraries. It depends on gobject. And so there's a library dependency tree here, which this is just sorting out for you. And you can sort of be aware of this, but it's lovely that the developing stack available in GNOME just sorts this out.
All right, so let's run this, see if it actually runs first time. Look at that. That's really awesome. It's up here and it's tiny. So if we make that bigger, it acts like a button. It does nothing because we've told it to do nothing, but it does exactly what we would expect. We've got a button in a window.
Yay.
It says, hello, peeps. And we need to kill that. We'll discuss why that works in a second. All right. So, secondly, with building your UI, if you don't want to write a lot of code, because if you're writing complicated UIs, it really is a lot of code, and it really is hard to work out what you're doing some days. Your second option is to use a thing called Glade. Glade is a UI building tool. It's really good because it allows you to poke around and get things sorted out and shuffle them around, and then give something a name, and then just grab that widget by its name later on. So we can do the exact same example with Glade. So if I move there, we watch the 8 million warnings that's on the screen. Let's make that bigger. Right, so I've actually turned off the, there's a show names option somewhere. It's beside icons. You guys may find this easier.
Ooh, that's neat.
After a while, you kind of just want the thing, so you stop caring about the names. So we can grab a window. And you see now it's giving us a window. And we can do the exact same example. So we want to scroll down.
So in the pane on the left is a list of all the stock, that's actually a bad word, of all the pre-configured widgets that come with GTK. And you can just grab the one you want and drag, drop, punch things into a user interface, which is pretty cool.
This is vaguely reminiscent of things you might have used, Visual Basic, for example. So you've got, over here on the right-hand side, are all your properties. We can give our button a name. This is the peep button. And you can see above that is the packing tree. So you can see we've got our window. We've called it window one, because that's the default. We've got a button packed into window one. And then we can start controlling the various properties of that. And you can see bits and pieces. We can also set signals directly from the interface. So what we'll do is we'll save that. And we will call that demo.glade. Okay, we'll save that. Let's minimize. Let's go here. Let's copy demo. demo1.cd. Right, so let's just quickly change this.
So the difference here is that instead of programmatically instantiating all these widgets as he did the first time, he's going to pull the widgets out of Glade. Glade started its life as a designer where after you'd roughed out the user interface you wanted, it spewed out, it generated code. And that was really cool for about 5 minutes, because the one thing that that's no good for is you can't go back to it again. After you'd gone and then use the code hooks that it written, the templates, you've got your code, but then you couldn't go back to Glade to reuse this otherwise wonderful tool to edit and make changes to the interface. So I believe it was James Henstridge and friends made some changes about 5 years ago to allow Glade to also spit out the interface that it was designing in an XML schema, which David will show you in a moment, just for the hell of it. And he wrote a second thing called libglade, not to be confused with Glade, and libglade reads in a Glade XML file and turns it into, dynamically at runtime, live widgets, which is pretty amazing. And the result of that is the difference there is that it means the Glade file, the XML file, can be reparsed by the Glade user interface designer, so you can reuse it and use it to change your program.
Okay, so I've written my program. I did that while Andrew's talking. You see I've put in here, I want to open this Glade XML file. I've stored that in a variable called XML, which is of type Glade XML, fair enough. I'm opening the file demo.glade, and the other two parameters I've set to null. If you look at the documentation, see one of them is the root of the tree. You can pick any point in that Glade tree that we saw, so this one here, as the top level point to start rendering your tree from. Null means the top. It's just a convenience. Otherwise, you can give it a name, you give it window one, if that's where you start rendering from. You can even give it a sub-level of a window. It becomes possible to build subsections of windows in Glade and put them into other places. And then finally, the other thing is domain, which is to do with translation, which we'll just leave alone for the moment. So we've written this. It's basically the same example. We've tried to compile it, and it quite happily tells us it doesn't link. It can't find glade/glade.h. And this is quite simply because I now need to ask to also link in the Glade package, which I've got the wrong name for.
So at this point, you're like, well, what the heck's the name? The package config actually has an argument which it will allow you to list all the packages, so along with a little bit of grep.
Which I've forgotten.
List
the,
all, I think. I don't have a list. I don't know.
Yeah, it is list all. Excellent.
It's a long list. Most of that is gibberish, but if you were to grep for blade in this case, you'd pull up. Hold on.
Yeah, libblade 2.0, I suppose, right? The second time around, anyway. So there's your compile line on that. Compile. So demo 1. And nothing happens because I forgot the most important step. Okay, the reason this is wrong is because I've not shown my window yet. So now what I want to do is use that window. So window equals.
And here's the neat part, right? He doesn't have the window because Blade instantiated, LibBlade instantiated it for you. But LibBlade gives you a method called getWidget, which allows you to pull widgets out of that Blade description or out of what it builds at runtime by name.
So you can see here the name was window 1, so straight up, which is asking Blade XML get widget, window 1. Oh, I also need the XML. I've been running too much Python lately, so I forget to do some of these things. All right. Look at that. Oops, come back. So there's our Blade.
So now here's the thing. Ordinarily, one of the nasty things about user interface design is the fact that you've got to make a tweak through the compile and run cycle, get back to where you were in the UI to see how your changes took effect. You can't change back after rerun your program, but one of the interesting things about Blade is that this widget tree was instantiated at runtime. So without recompiling the program, if David wanted to change the text on the label of the button, exactly.
Save that.
There's so this is Blade 3, which is much better than the previous version. There's still a couple glitches about focus taking and stuff, but that's all right.
Yeah, when you come up where your properties aren't sitting, that's because you didn't switch off the text entry box first. Yeah. It doesn't notice you're changing until you change text entry box.
So David didn't recompile the program. He just made a change to the Blade file and saved it. And as you can see, rerunning the program causes the different user interface to come up.
Excellent.
That's pretty powerful.
Okay, so create a program, like a thing using simply code. You can create a UI using nothing but Blade. Or you can mix and match. You can create parts of your UI in code, parts of your UI in Blade, and just plug them together. Obviously, for a part of your window, there's no point using Blade if it's actually quicker to write out the code. The canonical example of this is if you're putting together up a message dialog. GTK provides you with a standard message dialog class, and you can put that straight on the screen in about 3 lines of code, even in C. To do that in Blade will probably take you about 10 minutes of fiddling around and getting all the bits and pieces in, and still take you 6 lines of code to do that basic load my thing from Blade example. So you can mix and match your programs. You're not particularly tired. And then because you can load those programs using that different root of the tree, you can create components of UIs and load them without loading their top-level windows. And you can put components of the UI on the screen in different places without having to have done those bits of the UI programmatically. I've got examples of this that we're not going to show today. But
and this goes both ways. I tend to take the other opposite approach on this. I find that when I'm doing user interface design, that the outside part, the wrap, the layout of the window in general, is the part that's a bit tedious to do, and that's where Blade is often very helpful to get, do the box packing, which we'll be talking about momentarily, and labels. But that once you get deep down, then you've got some piece that's very dynamic, or is being updated a lot, or something where that's where the logic of your program is, the whole point of this window is, and that's the part I tend to do in code. What David was just describing is the opposite of that, is that maybe the outside you can be reusing a subsection of a window in different parents. Yeah. The question is how do you handle internationalization in Blade? The answer is it's awesome. A couple things. First of all, there was the parameter to Blade XML new, which was the translation domain. That's on the API side in C. But David just clicked a button beside the label text, and what it does is it allows you to actually add a little meta comment in there saying Andrew Cowie is a person's name. And because a translator in Swahili wouldn't necessarily be expected to know me, although I'm working on worldwide famousness and recognition and rock star status, but it hasn't quite come yet.
So what happens when you write your GLADE file and you save it? GLADE file is just XML, which we were actually going to show, so we'll do that now. And the translation system that GNOME developed and is now adopted reasonably widely is called IntelTool, which can remove these strings. If we have a look.
We actually have, at the end of our talk, we'll touch back on translation. So we'll get into the technologies for that side of it. But the fact that GLADE put this little bit of metadata in is the neat part of the beginning.
So you can see here that IntelTool will extract the information from this file, extract that string, and will even extract the comments and write it above, and generate the translation files that are used by the translators. I just need to click save at the top. It'll extract all those strings from the UI and expose them in the translation interface, which are the standard PO files that are used by GNU GetText to provide the translation. And then all the translation in both GLADE and GTK is provided by GetText. We'll actually get onto that in about, I don't know, an hour?
So, 57 minutes and probably about 22 seconds.
Okay, moving on. GTK uses what we call a box packing model. You saw before where we took a button, we packed it into a window. Everything you do is not ever going to be in fixed coordinates. This isn't like FLTK or like Visual Basic. When you pack things, you pack them into other things. And then when things resize, they get bigger so their children can choose to get bigger or stay at their minimum size. If the child is at its minimum size, it will push its parent out to that size, or you have to put it in some kind of scrollable type interface. But fundamentally, there's no having to faff about with coordinates or any of those horrible things. I don't know if anyone ever did any Visual Basic programming in like high school or university, but writing a resize callback was always really hard. This way, writing a resize is really easy. You saw us resizing that demo, and the window resized straight away.
This actually is very fundamental, and one thing I'd ask you to keep in mind as we're talking about packing is that there's actually a very explicit reason. There is a widget that allows you to place things by exact coordinates, but after we go to all the trouble of exposing that widget, we then tell you not to use it for the following reason. GTK is the widget toolkit that's used for GNOME, which is an incredibly internationalized platform. It's in way more languages than any of the commercial products. Part of that is because of the free software, and that's all because of free software, of course. The thing about different languages is that they have different fonts, right? And also, people are using different themes. So two things suddenly become really important. Accessibility, which is, for example, people that have visual impairment might need a high contrast theme, let alone screen readers, which are kind of off topic for that comment. But also, just different languages. If you take standard Latin or characters like what you have on the screen right now, we're all used to those taking up a certain amount of space. But Arabic takes a much wider amount of space, and also incidentally goes the other direction. Same with Hebrew. And the thing about that is when you write your program, you can see on screen, oh yes, well this is my title and it fits just beautifully, and I'm getting, you know, you're worrying about everything being all so precisely positioned. But when someone comes and translates that to another language, the text is going to be a different size. Now the box packing model we're about to talk about has a process which goes that each widget from the bottom of the hierarchy up, requests a certain amount of space. And it finally gets to the top, and the window manager and the X server discuss how much space that has been asked for in aggregate, and then either gives it that or tells it some other amount. And anyway, that ricochets back down the stack in what's called the size allocation process. And the result of that is that each widget then gets given a certain amount of space, and then the text labels or whatever will then try and accommodate and draw that. In general, a label will get as much space as it needs. But the thing is that you have to let go. And this is really foreign, where especially, you know, people are used to being so fiddly with websites, right? Everybody's like, I want my image positioned exactly here, and worrying about fonts, and all this precise fiddliness. And yet, we've all experienced with websites, what happens when you increase the font size, or you resize the window, and your whole display goes to hell, right? And so, in website land, most of us have come to realize, and we spend all of our time explaining to the executives and the graphic designers, why it is they can't absolutely position things on a web page. For some reason, that hasn't quite made it back to UI design in terms of people who come to it new. And so right off the bat, I really encourage you to be flexible with where things are positioned. Now, the box packing model that we're now going to show you is all about creating hierarchies of containers so that you can position things relative to each other with certain constraints. And that then means that when someone else runs it with a different theme, with a different font, that it'll react and reorganize appropriately, and they'll be able to use your program too. And you don't have to worry about the fact that their fonts are bigger or smaller.
Okay. So this is our box packing example. This is our Vogon constructor fleet like operation UI. So we'll start with a top-level GTK window. That's the same window we put on the screen before. And into it, we're going to pack. Because that window can only have one object, the object we're going to pack into it is a vertical packing box. This is a box that can have any number of rows. They can be resized independently or forced to be the same size. They can have spacing between them. There's a bunch of parameters you can set. But most importantly, you can pack multiple items into it. So we'll pack a label into the top of it, what's called pack start. A lot of these boxes, rows aren't referred to by explicit number. You either put them at the start or at the end. So we can also pack into it a button, and then we can pack in something else. So here we packed in a status bar. And then we've got our completed application. And now at this point, you start to look like you've actually got a real application rather than just a button in the window.
Before you go on.
Yep.
So one of the properties of VBox is that you can pack things into it vertically that will have variable size vertically, but they, as you can see in this example, they all have the same width. As you can imagine, the HBox variant of this, things that go into it will have varying vertical size, but will all have the same, varying horizontal width, but will all have the same height. And so that's why you see the button there stretching from one side to the other, right? Because this label, even though it's been wrapped, has decided to request this much space, and that's forced the VBox to be that width. And then when the button came in, the button only, of course, needed this much width, but the container that is in was wider than that, so it got given more, and so it just stretched itself.
All of these are actually configurable. This is currently the default. We'll discuss how to configure those in a second. So box packing actually affects what happens on a deeper basis than even just VBoxes and HBoxes and tables and all those others. Even some widgets you never expect, you can pack things into. So the classic example is the button, as a sort of buttons of an atomic element, right? No, it's not. A button is actually a container. When you saw that diagram we had at the beginning with the green boxes, you saw the button inherited from GTK bin, meaning it was a bin is an object you pack one item into. So what actually a button is...
Actually, that's important. A button is something you can pack one thing into. But the fact that it's even a container at all is a bit of a step. But not only is it more than just a button, some magical thing, it's actually it's a bin that you can pack one thing into. But since you might want to pack more than one thing into, off we go with some more box packing.
So obviously the thing we pack into it, putting things horizontally, we packed in a HBox, horizontal box, which if we blow that out, we can see we packed an image, and we packed a label.
One of the things I thought about when we were drawing this was some people think about taking things down from a top level, which is, okay, you've got this, and then break it apart, and then split it into its individual components. It's quite all right if you conceive of this mentally the other direction, which is start with an image and a label, and we'll need something to join them together, an HBox. Okay, so pack them in already. Done. Fine. And now put them into the thing that wraps it. And when you're doing your UI design, whether you're thinking from window, top down, and what you're packing into it, or if you're starting with a bunch of sub-elements and building up something composite, you tend to think actually in both directions, but both are equally valid. There's no one that's right and one that's wrong.
All right. Are people okay with this so far? Has anyone got any questions at this point? Excellent. Good. You're all really bright. Okay. So we'll do another example. We'll show a little bit more using Glade. So we'll come across back to our Glade window. And we will scroll, and we'll create ourselves a new window. And we'll do something a little bit more advanced than a button in a window. So, as we said before, a window is a thing that's going to take one element. So if I add a button to it, I can't add another one. It just won't happen. You can see I've only got one button. No matter how hard I try, I'm only going to get one button there. So we need a container that can take more than one item. So you can see here in the containers list, is a list of containers. So let's have a vertical box, and it's the number of items, well, it's a 4.
And you can change that after the fact, so just, you know, pick some number, and if you need more lines, in more rows in your VBox, you can add them quickly later.
You can see just over here, number of items. You can also right-click and go insert before, insert after. So let's put something in our top one. Let's put a button. And so that's all very well and good. Now we want to put in a label. We want to put in a display and say the display has got a static part, it's part of the UI, and a dynamic part that's fed by our program. So we obviously need to pack these together. So what we use now is a horizontal box. We'll say items 2. And now you can see you've packed in. So we've got a vertical box, and inside that is our horizontal box on that row. So now we can put in 2 separate labels. If I scroll down and find label. That better than making a label. Let's make a box. I don't know, is that how fast they go? I don't actually watch Star Trek.
Yeah, nice try.
I honestly don't.
You knew the 10 was the max, man. You're done.
I saw that film.
Yeah.
So, we're off to a good start. Another one.
And the thing is that right now you're seeing that spin button being like with more space around it, and the spacing is equal right now. This is actually because right now you're actually seeing that box packing stretching in action. Blade is doing its best to show you what you're creating right now, but this is, of course, isn't actually the program. When it renders, the widgets will request the minimum amount of space they need, which will probably be less than this big monster. There's no reason for this current row that David has selected to be this tall, so it'll be narrower, right? And so when David runs this up, it won't be this tall, unless, of course, he stretches the window to be like that. But that's an example of the dynamic box packing action. You've all seen this in your interfaces as you drag the size around and stuff, reallocate sizes. And people do end up spending a lot of time with the nuances of packing to allocate. What you do when you pack something into a container, you tell it whether or not the child that you're packing gets allocated extra space.
Okay, so let's do that now. Yeah, so sure. We want to say that this HBox won't take any extra space it's been given. So we say expand, no, look at that. And now the other widgets are expanding to fill the spare space, and that widget is now collapsing not to fill its spare space. The other option here, fill, is subtly different. Expand will say, I don't want to be given any more extra space, so I'll just take what I'm given and let everything else expand to fill the extra space. Whereas fill says, if I am given extra space, I will or won't use it. Often what you want to do, if you want something to be tight and to fit tight, you want to use expand. So expand yes, sorry, expand no, but fill yes. It's very rare that you'll actually say fill no, but there is a subtle distinction. So then you can see also here this label's kind of big. That's not so nice. So let's go here, expand no. And now that's not too bad, but we can also perhaps go a little bit more nuts. We can put some space in there. Oh, that's actually the wrong one. I want.
It took me a while to clue into this, so I'll say it out right here. The properties that he is manipulating right now using the dialog in the notebook on the right-hand side are all things that you, for about 90% of cases, there's an individual function for in the GTK API. The properties are also available through a separate API, which allows you to explicitly set property with these names, which is obviously how this is working. It's got a list of the string names, all the different properties, and it's just setting them dynamically. But really, so what this means is you've got a couple different ways it's going to happen.
Okay, so we've now created ourselves a reasonably more complicated UI. We've now used the VBox and the HBox. We've chosen to expand or not expand an item. The other packing widget that I thought we might quickly demonstrate then, we'll add ourselves another row, is a table. So quickly drop in a table. We won't go into this in too much depth because it's reasonably self-explanatory. So we've created a 3x3 table. We can change that using our items on the side. We can fiddle a bunch of other properties. So we can pack some items into that.
color button.
Okay, where's the color button? So put in the color button. So we can do that. Now we go across to packing. We've now got the expand and fill. You can see, oops, let's move the mouse out of the way, for vertical and horizontal. And we can also control this. So if we want to shift this across to two columns, so we can do col span and row span type table manipulations, and we can do some reasonably tricky things with that.
The thing about table, though, is that I should probably warn you right away, it's not a spreadsheet. I mean, theoretically, yes, you could create a spreadsheet out of this by packing labels into it, but the labels would individually have to request and force themselves to be the same size to have the spreadsheet effect, right? All in a spreadsheet, start anyway, they're all a certain, you know, all uniform size. The box packing being what it is, David just showed you stretching, but the thing is it's not going to pack. It looked like a regular grid spreadsheet when it was up there, but it's not. It's just a container that's M by M sized. And if you've got one big widget and lots of small ones, then it will rearrange so that the widgets fit individually, with constraining the individual heights and widths according to which row or column there. Is that a question or just a stretch? Awesome.
I just thought to pull the XML up again because now we've got a good example. You can see the packing here is represented in the XML. So if you look here, you can see, so widget, class, equals HBox, and the ID, which is the name we gave it. And then if we look inside that, we've got a child, which is the widget, which is our label. So the XML represents the tree structure of your UI. So let's move on from there.
Yeah.
Cool. Everyone's happy so far?
Sure.
Yes.
Ooh, I know. Hold on. I got a microphone. And feet.
Can you change the number of items in a box at runtime? Or
yes,
that,
you can.
You can. Okay, thanks.
All these calls. So when you're adding items to a box, the underlying mechanism is like you do that pack start, pack end, put items in a box. If you've got the pointer to that box or the reference to that box, then you can have a widget you created and call pack start as often as you want. It will just keep getting bigger. Yes.
Yes. So why don't you show get widget on one of those boxes?
Okay, we can do that.
So we actually didn't run that this file. So let's run it. Let's see it on screen. Well, so first of all, he's going to have to change the Glade file name.
So let's relink that.
There we go. Is it still done with Glade?
Sorry, what's wrong? It's in the same file.
Hi, Arthur. Do you need to talk to everybody?
Nope, just to me. I'm guessing you don't.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So some people didn't collect their OLPCs, so we've chosen some more random names. At lunchtime, go up to the courtyard outside and see if you were one of the random people.
Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Rusty Russell!
So you can see here, there's our little UI. What we'll do then is when
I'll leave it up for a second longer than that.
Oh, sorry.
There's the UI, space, breathe, yeah.
So what we'll do now is we'll actually grab a reference to our VBox.
So what we're going to do is the Glade XML get widget call is going to be used to extract something deeper in the hierarchy.
The actual window size, that sizes itself to what the actual elements are expected to be?
So I was mentioning request and allocation. It is if David can just put the other one on top just while we're talking.
This one?
Yeah, just tell the window manager to leave it on top. Thanks. So what has happened is that the width of this thing has been determined by the warp speed label plus the width of the 9.0 spin button, and that has determined the width of this window, because the H box took the width of one, the width of the other, added up and told its parent V box, that's what I need. And meanwhile, the V box had three elements and two buttons and the other thing, which had those heights accordingly, and it aggregated those and told the window, I need that width by that height, and that's what the window asked the window manager for. The properties that you can, one of the ones that's actually fairly useful is there's a method on GTK window called set default size. And I'm sure you can find that in...
Yep. Okay, so...
Do it programmatically.
This is adding our item programmatically. We'll just add another one.
Sure.
Yeah, there's a second window, so if you take it away. There you go. So we've now opened up our Glade file. We've grabbed our window out of it. We've grabbed the VBox out of it. We've created a new button programmatically, and we've shoved it in that window. Anything you could do that you could do programmatically, you can do on a Glade widget with a couple of examples that you'll discover later on. If you need to pass an item to a constructor, you'll find that that can't be done, like if it's a constructor-only argument, because Glade is obviously calling the constructors for you. There are workarounds for this. There's a way to, instead of creating a widget, file for callback to create a widget.
Honestly, though, the moment you start fighting the API like this, either switch from Glade to code or code to Glade, right? You know, like, don't beat your head against it. It's meant to be used in a certain way. It's not meant to be that hard, other than the fact it's insane. Nice.
Excellent.
Just maybe one more thing to do programmatically to finish answering this fellow's question. If you could do GTK window set default size of, 300 by 200. So the interesting thing about set default size is there's two. There's set size request, which is how you can tell it the minimums. You can influence and force the minimum size that something's requesting. But the other thing you can do is that default one. And the amazing thing about that one is it'll come up at that size, but it's still able to be resized down to the minimum. Can you actually? So it's at a default size of this, but if he grabs the bottom handle, and he can minimize it down to what the actual minimum is, which is pretty cool. So that one actually comes in handy when you're building the sort of master window for a UI. There's nothing wrong with giving it a little bit more. If you know more or less that you want to have a slightly bigger window, probably at that point you're starting to talk about jumping to maximize, but whatever. That works. It's just a neat little hook that's in there. Yeah.
I guess along those lines, can you find out what the maximum window size is going to be for the desktop?
Yes.
Yes.
There's API to do all of that. There's API also to discover how big something's going to be created and how big something like its minimum size. All those are available. Some of them aren't available until after you've made certain calls to start the sizing process.
I think we'll have time, and if you remind me when we're in the Java side, I'll see if I can pull that up, because I think I've got some code that does that.
Okay. So,
yes, sir.
Is it possible to convert the XML into code? So if you find you're fighting the API and you want to...
Not anymore, nor should you never do it. I can't stress this enough. It used to be thing people do all the time, but you convert your XML into code, and very quickly you end up with a divergence now between your code and your XML that you'd be throwing your XML, you'd have to throw your XML away, and it's generated code, so it's never nice to read anyway. Often what you do then is you set yourself up, so you write yourself a window creation function, which you would first do your Glade bits, and then you would grab the spaces where you wanted to put your special widgets, and you'd put them in by hand. I can show you some examples of that after that. I don't want to put them on the screen because they're all a little bit beta at the moment. But it's certainly doable. Just generating code is a bad idea.
One of the things the lovely things about having both of us up here is we have slightly different backgrounds. I started thinking that Glade was the greatest thing since sliced bread. I have since backed away from it considerably, and I actually got to the point where I stopped using it at all because it was just easier for me, especially in Java GNOME, to just crank out code with the code completion that I have working for me. I have since come off of the no Glade at all thing back to a little bit of Glade for, in my case, in the work that I do. When you've got lots and lots of labels and lots of entries, if you're doing them up programmatically, you need names for all these bloody things. And suddenly you start having to it's just a pain in the ass to have, label number 47, that's no help, or the text label what's up there? Another example. Thank you. The warp speed label. Well, that's a pretty stupid variable name, right? Who cares? Because especially you've got a string that says warp speed, right? I found that when you're doing lots and lots of labels, or just doing basic layout, but Glade's actually fantastic for that, because it's just anonymous to you. And then I could grab the element out where I could then plug in my code. I shift back and forth. The lovely thing is that you've got the flexibility to use both tools, and all I can say is experiment and see what makes you happy.
one thing I suppose you probably shouldn't do, but it irks me that I would want to put in one space before the warp. So do you put in an empty container just with a single string just before the word warp, or what, how do you arrange that?
The educated alignment, wouldn't it?
Sorry, you want to put a space in just here?
Okay, so there's about three different ways you could do this. There's three different ways you could do this. First is that you could... that's okay. Okay, as step zero, because of course we're all, you know, computer science idiots, is this is actually borderline close to that case I said of leave it alone, because that's when themes and fonts and sizes come to play. And let's say a Swiss ship, I mean, not that you're really worrying about internationalization off the very first march, but if it was going to be right to left instead of left to right, well then that little bit of space on the edge wouldn't mean anything, right? So that's the kind of thing I was talking about the letting it go factor. That said, we all want our UI to look exactly like we want it to look like. So there's a couple things you can do. One is to, GTK label itself has, I didn't see what you were working on behind.
Sorry, I was totally going to stop talking about everything. Yeah, the standard way to do that is to use what's called border width. In the style guidelines, it actually tells you to use some border width. 6 pixels is normally the correct one. Often you have to fiddle around a little bit. But besides that, there is padding and alignment on the labels.
So in Glade, so one way you can do it is in Glade, if you click on the label, there's label one, it has, X padding, the amount of space to add. But this isn't probably what you want, because I think it's as you can see, it's adding to both sides. Of course, you can then use the X alignment, give it 20 padding again, or something. Yeah, cool. And then X line zero. Well, I'm actually going to say it's not like HTML, but they're solving the same problem, which, as ever in engineering and science, if you've got the same problem, people tend to come up with the same solution or at least deal with the same challenges. So it's there somewhere in general. So one is that widget gives you these capabilities, as is here, that you can mess with. The other is there's a widget called GTK Align. Oh, that's GTK Alignment. We had a slide for that.
Yeah. That slide there. Okay,
just a sec.
Apparently we need to take a 2-minute break, so we'll continue.
You wanted like switch loops, and we just need to switch over AV tapes.
Okay, so we'll just finish this sentence, and then we'll have a quick break. So, and this is actually a good point of presentation. Is it a good place in the presentation to stop? I think so. Yeah. Okay. We just had listed up the widgets we were talking about and added a couple more. GTK alignment gives you padding and positioning control in much finer grains, so, and it's a bin, so you would pack the label into alignment and the alignment into the HBox. Right, and it's otherwise the alignment is transparent, but it gives you this kind of positioning control.
What you'll find when we get on later onto the UI design and style guides, you'll find that a lot of this is covered and how to do it. The style guidelines give you a lot of direction on how to get these things to look like GTK apps. I'm just a bit slack. Okay, we've got to take 2 minutes to change.
We'll take a break. I forget 2 minutes.